Hello, everybody. Lovely to have you here once again with us. A lot of news, breaking news, surprises, takeovers, upset. We are here once again to bring it for you all in one quick and sweet episode. So without further ado, welcome to the latest episode of Falconer Podcast. So Josh, what do you make of what's happening in the football world so far?
I mean, I'm so excited. I'm not a Newcastle supporter, but I mean, I just can't wait for the takeover. And in the next 5 years, we'll be seeing Newcastle challenging at the top end of the Premier League.
Okay, but you know, it comes to the detriment of some other clubs too, as well. You know that?
Yeah, of course. Like the big clubs now, if they're not careful, Newcastle will take their place. It happens.
Well, we'll be going deeper into it. So, first off, there's only one place to start from. So, the Player of the Month award is out. So, from what is currently out there already, we're seeing that Ronaldo has won it. What do you make of that already? Like, because when you actually check the stats in comparison with some of the people Ronaldo was up against, you could make case for someone else to have won that award.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's someone else you're talking about is definitely Mo Salah, because he had the same number of goals Ronaldo had, plus an assist. And I think overall, Salah played better, but got the same number of goals. So I guess it's just a PR move for the Premier League. Ronaldo is the biggest player, like the most marketable player in the league. So if he has a good month and someone equals him, they are going to give the award to Ronaldo. You have to actually better Ronaldo to get the award. But I think Salah equaled him. So I guess you can say it's fair. You can't really argue too much about it.
But this, it brings back the question everyone keeps asking time and time again. Like, Salah being overlooked again for something major like this. Like, it might seem minor to some people, but to me, it's major. In the sense that, looking at the kind of performance he's putting up there, you can make case that he's actually like top five players right now in the world on current form. Looking at his performance and all, you can make case that he should have actually won it, like you said. But does that even, like, should we not entertain all those things that people have been saying, that sometimes it seems like they overestimate some other players and underestimate players like Mo Salah?
I think I would say Salah is underestimated. I'll say Salah is not regarded as top three in the world because you have people like Messi, Ronaldo, and recently Lewandowski. So I think if you ask any football fan, they will tell you Salah is top five in the world. But the problem is it top two? Is it top three? I'm not so sure. If he continues like this, at the end of the season, definitely he will be top three. But from what he did last season, he wasn't top three. So I guess it has rolled on to this season. But now, after the great goal he scored against City, I think more people are paying attention to him. But I don't think he's underrated.
Well, fair enough. You said it well. You said it better than I could have said it. Well, moving on to the next award that was given, which I actually find very, very funny, because they gave the Manager of the Month award to our one and only Mikel Arteta. And looking at the picture,
Come on. Round of applause, please. Come on. I mean, this is a man that is much maligned, but he has turned things around, hasn't he?
So you're entertaining this now? Him getting the award?
Well, you know, we touched on this at the end of August when they gave Nuno Espirito Santo. And the reason for doing that was because Tottenham had won all their games. Fast forward the month after, now it is Arsenal that won all their games. Obviously, they drew with Brighton last weekend, but Brighton is in new month in October, so that doesn't count. They won all their games in September. So I guess I understand why they give him, though you could say that Pep winning two games and drawing one, considering his fixtures, maybe you can argue Pep deserved it. But for the criteria they use of winning matches only, then yeah, Arteta deserves it.
Yeah, I get it, because I'm looking at the star right now. 3 wins, 5 goals, 2 clean sheets. Yes, the way you look at it on paper, you could say he deserves it. But like, he was up against some managers, Jurgen Klopp and Pep Guardiola. Like, because
Graham Potter, what he's doing with Brighton is sensational.
So, but sometimes, yeah, these awards, they're like, I would like to know the major criteria. Obviously, we know winnings is involved, but still, like, they have to consider. Like, I know you said this before.
I just tell you, the only criteria they use is winning. They don't care if you play against the team that is 18th, 19th, and 20th on the table, and you win those three matches. You're getting the award. So I'm with you on this, on the fact that I don't think that should be the only criteria used, but I am certain that that is the only criteria used.
Okay. So before we move on to one of the managers we just spoke about now, Andros Townsend was given goal of the month for his stunning effort against Burnley. Like, I think that one is something we can all agree with, is it not?
Yeah, 100%.
All right, moving on to one of the managers we mentioned that was up against Mikel Arteta for the manager of the month. Jurgen Klopp is currently celebrating his anniversary at Liverpool. So he came into the club in 2015 and most likely he will be set to leave in 2024. So what do you think about his tenure, his reign so far, Josh? I think it's marvelous for the kind of work he has done, in my opinion. But what do you think?
Yeah. It's great because, I mean, Liverpool were languishing in mid-table when he took over. And they were still in mid-table for, like, the first year or so. Then gradually he turned them to a top-four side, from a top-four side to title contenders, from title contenders to actually winning the title as well as the Champions League. But what I'll say is, I don't think he has taken the cup competitions serious enough. I think Liverpool are the best side that, in the last 4 years, Liverpool are the best side that have only won one Premier League. Like, I don't recall too many teams being as good as Liverpool without winning multiple titles. That's the only sticking point because the team is so good. You have Van Dijk, who is arguably the best centre-back in the world. You have Salah, Mane, Trent, Alisson. That team should have won more than one title. Like, I think so. But then, who knows? They might win another title this season, so that would not be a problem anymore. And then, no FA Cup, no League Cup. So, if he leaves and he has won only the Champions League and Premier League, I don't think it would be a great achievement anymore. But till 2024, he has the chance to add a few more titles. So far, so good. But if he doesn't achieve any more till 2024, then maybe there will be questions asked.
Well, yeah, I do agree with what you just said. Like, it makes perfect sense. But when you look at it from, like, obviously, we're seeing it from hindsight right now because it has already happened. Because when just dip it on paper and just sum up everything, he has taken Liverpool to I think that year was still called Carling Cup Final. Then he took them to...
They lost to City.
Yeah, okay. Then he now took them to the European Final against Sevilla, and Sevilla came back because they were not good enough in the second half. That's two finals already. He took them to a Champions League final. He took them, they were
Carlos came bearing gifts for Real Madrid.
No, that was more than gifts. That was just Carlos was Santa Claus that on that night. Then he now took them very close and achieved a record point for a team that is finishing second. Any team that achieved that amount of points most likely wins the league. But then they finished second, so they were very close. He now took them to another Champions League final. So bottom line is, when you look at it from paper, like, it's a huge achievement and a huge deal for what he has done. But do you think if he decides to leave in 2024 or even sooner, like, do you think he'll be considered a Liverpool legend?
Definitely, for one reason. He gave them the title for the first time in 30 years. And even if that's the only trophy he would have won, he would have been a legend. Now, you add the Champions League to that, and then he's even more solidified. But I think the interesting thing about that Champions League win was, I think if they had lost that final to Tottenham, I think they would have sacked him. Because you would have had a final in... Like, you would have lost two Champions League finals, you would have lost the League Cup, the Europa League final, and the Premier League so close with 97 points finishing behind City, then I think if he had lost that final, he would have been considered a nearly man. And then Liverpool would have just thought that, oh, this guy is unlucky, so let's just cut our losses and do away with him. But I think because he won the final, then it was a catalyst for them because they now had the taste of winning, and so they were able to win the Premier League the next season. I think that actually catapulted them to the Premier League.
I agree halfly with what you said because I just think really the only thing I did not agree with is just that I feel Klopp was very comfortable. I didn't feel like at any point he was under pressure. Yes, he was under pressure to deliver a trophy, but like under pressure in the sense that in losing his job or in like it's just the same way we see Ole right now.
Flip side.
Okay.
Do you think Pochettino would have been sacked if Tottenham had won that final? Because Tottenham were the ones who lost. And Pochettino lost his job not too long after that. Now, do you think he would have been sacked if he had won it? I don't think so. I think
Let me answer your question from this point. Yeah. I think personally, Pochettino would have been, if he had won the final, he would be given more time to actually turn things around because we saw that the next season, Tottenham were not able to turn things around and they were in danger of losing grounds with the other teams. So they actually had to fire him because the poor form still continued to the beginning of a new season. So that's what I saw. But I think if he had won that final, it could have given him more time, but I don't think it would guarantee him staying because when the next season, Tottenham were in such an abysmal form.
Oh, yeah, that's true, fair point. But then maybe they would have been able to attract better players because there's one thing, if you win the Champions League, players want to play for you. If you lose the final, then players really don't care that you got to the final. So they weren't able to attract top talent because they didn't win it.
Yeah, true. So we wish Jurgen Klopp more success in his tenure at Liverpool.
I mean, like, we don't even need to wish him more success. He's definitely going to have more success. That team is too good not to win more trophies.
Yeah, like honestly, like when I say I will wish Jurgen Klopp, like honestly, I don't wish it in my full chest because it's one of all those things where the way we're happy that Ole is still at United, deep down, many of us know that we're not happy with Jurgen Klopp still staying at Liverpool because we know if he leaves, Liverpool might not be as good as they are. So we just leave it at that.
let me just say a wild take here. Yeah? You know, I mentioned some teams might fall off when Newcastle comes on top. And I fear one of those teams might be Liverpool. Because, I mean, Liverpool, the owners don't spend money for whatever reason. They have refused to spend money. And look at the fact that the era, it looks like they're going to be coming to the end of an era, 2024 or thereabout. Because Klopp's contract is expiring, Van Dijk's contract, Jordan Henderson, Mo Salah, Mane, like all of them at once, and it's going to be so hard to replace all those key figures at the same time in the space of 1 or 2 years. So I fear for Liverpool come 2024.
But some of their players, they tie them to a long-term contract. Like I think Van Dijk.
Yeah, that's the thing because they are aging. So obviously, Mane's contract, Salah, Van Dijk 2024. But by then they'll be in their mid-30s or like 33, 34. You don't expect them to be the same players they are now. And to sign replacements for such world-class players is going to require a lot of money, which I'm not sure if the Liverpool board and owners are willing to spend. So Liverpool will be at the top from now to 2024, but I'm not sure they'll be around after 2024 because of the owners.
Okay, let's go in depth on this, but we'll approach it from a different angle. So, let's look at the biggest news we've had in the last 48 hours.
Newcastle have been taken over by the Saudi-backed consortium. The Saudi consortium will have 80% of the club, while Amanda Stavely, who brokered the deal, will own 10% of the club, as well as the Ruben brothers having 10% of the club. And Amanda Stavely will be the face of the club, will be working day-to-day at the club as a director, while the Saudi group would be far away back in their country, but they've said that they want to come and see and have a feel of the club. So they'll be visiting Newcastle soon,
thing is, one thing I just want to highlight is some of the things Amanda said in the press conference she gave, in the interview she did with Sky Sports. She was like, obviously, they can't just hit the ground running. They have to be clear plan. They have to talk to the staffs that are already there. She said she has spoken to Steve Bruce. She has spoken to the captain, Lascelles. She has spoken to some of the players already. And now what they are trying to now do is check the books, check how everything is being operated before they can now start restructuring. And she said that the restructuring will take from ground level to up. So definitely we'll see developments in their youth, training grounds, stadiums, all those kind of good stuff. But what is interesting, she was asked the question whether they will have this marquee signing, just like the way Manchester City had for Robinho then. And she was like, she didn't want to give too much away. She was like, she didn't really answer the question directly. But the one that that I think Newcastle fans would be excited to know about is when she was asked where she see them in 5-6 years' time. She was like, they should be at the top, challenging for the Prem and other trophies. So obviously, there will be a plan for them to get to that position, for them to be in that kind of position in 5-6 years' time. And looking at it, it doesn't bode well for the rest of the bigger teams, because these guys, their funds are massive.
First of all, I won't forgive you for calling the Premier League the Prem. Like, you know how much I hate abbreviations. So I mean, I just winced when I heard you say the Prem, but I get you, Sha. So I'd say, she said that she expects to win the league within 5 to 10 years, which I think is reasonable. 10 years is a lot of time. So 5 to 10 years, I'm sure that they will win at least one Premier League because of the backing they have. And then another interesting part about this is Steve Bruce, who we know he grew up as a Newcastle fan, but because he coached Sunderland and he was brought in by the much hated former Newcastle owner. So it looks like the Newcastle fans want him out. And we know that usually when there's new ownership like this, they usually like to come and bring their own man for the job. So it's going to be unfortunate if he loses his job because he loves the club so much. But another sad thing about it is the game that Newcastle have after the international break against Tottenham Hotspur would be Steve Bruce's 1,000th game in charge as a manager at league level, at like various levels, whether lower division or Premier League. 1,000 games, and he might be stuck on 999 if he gets the sack before then.
I just think they'll hold on to Steve Bruce for the foreseeable future. I think it'll be too soon because they're obviously I've had conversation with various people, and there are already talks from because I do have conversation with some of the guys from the UK who have access to some of all these people once in a while. So, and they're already telling me that there are talks already about having a new sponsorship, having to revamp the entire stadium. So it's actually crazy how things turn around in football. But what's interesting here is the previous owner came out to say, I would like it to be known that I received a higher offer for the club than the one that I accepted. It was from another reputable bidder who made a credible case. But I felt the bid that we accepted from the current new owners would deliver the best for Newcastle United. Money wasn't my only consideration. What I would just say to that is, of course. But what will you say to that, George?
Actually, you just said what I wanted to say. I just wanted to say, of course. But, okay, seriously, I think he's just scrapping. Like, he's just trying to find love from the fans, because we know how much the Newcastle fans hate Mike Ashley. And funny enough, he's actually a Tottenham fan. So who knows? Their next match, he might be supporting Tottenham against Newcastle. So what a time to sell the club when the next match is against the club you actually support. So it will be interesting to see who he's supporting if he's at the stadium. But I think he might be saying the truth, but I don't think it was necessary to come out to say it. Like, I don't think it was necessary. Like, you can just keep it to yourself. because you saying this will not even make the fans love you. So what's the point?
Well, I agree. I just think he's trying to show save his reputation, make himself look good in the media. But what I'll just say is, I think the Newcastle thing is a project that people will be excited to see how it unfolds in the coming years. And I feel they'll be
bless you.
Yeah. So what I just want to point out is, I think they might even do one or two marquee signings where to get the fans more excited, maybe in January or in the next summer. And if they want to do that, Coutinho is there available for them. Wink, wink. So they can come for him.
But Coutinho is no more a marquee player. You know, one thing that was interesting, I was so excited and so hyped up that when I saw the news that the takeover was going to happen, I actually Googled players whose contracts are expiring next summer. And now we saw there was a statement on Twitter that it just said that Newcastle has, because they've been making profits of over 30 million for the past three seasons, so they have 190 plus million to spend in the transfer window in the next 3 years. So basically, let's say 200 million. So Newcastle can spend 200 million in the next 3 years. And so if they can spend 200 million in the next 3 years, they might as well just look at the free agent pool, because my goodness, we have some amazing players who are going to be free next season. We have people like Lorenzo Insigne. We have people like Rudiger, Niklas Süle. I mean, a lot. The list goes on. So if they could get just four of those free agents, I think they might just be in business.
Yeah, I agree. And you even forgot to mention the likes of Paul Pogba and Kylian Mbappe. We all know it might be a bit of a stretch.
I don't think Pogba will be possible now. But I think people like Insigne and Belotti will be possible, because Belotti is not going to win anything with Torino. So Belotti might be tempted to go to Newcastle, who are starting a winning project. People like Insigne as well. He has given his all at Napoli, gotten very little success in terms of silverware. I think those are the ones he can get. People like Pogba will be aiming higher, like for Madrid and Barcelona of this world. And although I'm not sure Barcelona is that much higher than United at the moment. But I think Pogba and Mbappe might be out of reach now, but people like Insigne can be within reach for them.
Always running agendas against my club. It's fine, it's calm. But what I'll just add to you is, before we quickly move on from this segment, is I just want to quickly highlight something. This is what Florentino Perez have been saying. Clubs, we keep getting away with so many things. So in a few years' time, when Newcastle starts bringing in money from sources that we do not know about and improving their team, no one should cry about being righteous, because these are the same things people keep crying about. If it doesn't favor your club, you start crying about the game not being fair and the game not being righteous. At the end of the day, we have the Super League, and the Super League is taking place right now in the Premier League. In a few years, we'll have so many super teams in the that, and some of them will still be able to keep up, because money past money, as my Nigerian assets, we say it. So,
just briefly, can you guess two Barcelona players who I didn't mention there as potential free agents next season? Pedri and Ansu Fati have their contracts expiring next summer. Would you look at that? And if they continue
please, I will cut you short there. Why are you running agendas? We all know that Barcelona is working to sign these kids. So
there's financial fair play in Spain, isn't there? So I'm just curious. I'm not running any agendas. I'm just genuinely curious to find out if they will be able to sign them to new contracts.
No, and I think Dembele is the third one. No, I know you very well. This didn't come from your genuine side. I know you. But no problem. I will entertain it. We'll see what will happen in the next coming weeks and months to unfold. So moving on, Newcastle currently are in a relegation tussle, if you'd like. Their position in the league table is not a position that the new owners will be proud of. They are currently 19th, sitting just 2 points ahead of Norwich, who is sitting at 20th, which brings me to the other side of the coin. We have three promoted clubs that came from the Championship into the Prem: Norwich, Watford,
Here we go again. Here we go again with the Prem talk. What will it take you to just say Premier League?
Okay. Oh yeah, I will try my best now. So we have those three teams that got promotion into the Premier League.
Thank you very much. And right now,
two are looking safe. While one are currently in a relegation battle between Newcastle, Burnley, if you like, you can extend it to Southampton and Leeds. What do you make of the entire dynamics when it comes to this relegation battle that is looking like it's shaping up to be an interesting one going further into the season?
So what I think is, I think Leeds will be safe. I think I was worried, like the last episode, or not the last episode, but the episode we did last week, Friday, I said, I wanted to see Leeds against Watford. If they don't beat Watford, then I'll be worried for them. But they beat Watford quite comfortably. The scoreline was just 1-0, but they totally bossed the game and should have won by more goals. So I think Leeds will be safe. Leeds will get points from a few of the big boys and beat those lower teams, I think. So I think Leeds will be safe. Before the season started, I was very worried for Southampton, and I'm proving to be right so far. They are 17th. They are with no win so far. One of four teams with no win so far. So I think Watford are in trouble. I think everyone there is in trouble apart from Leeds, basically. From 17th to 20th are in trouble. Oh, as well as Watford, because they've sacked their manager. And now Ranieri is here. Dilly ding, dilly dong.
Yeah, I just want to even highlight that about Watford. Watford, they are currently looking like they are not in the battle. They are currently sitting, you could say, not really well above the relegation zone, but they are currently sitting 16th at the table. What do you think they were quick to pull the trigger, or were they like, let's just give Ranieri the reins as soon as possible so that we'll be clear from this entire relegation thing? Because we've seen it with the Porto family. They are quick to hire and fire, just like the Chelsea format, hire and fire. They don't care about loyalty. And do you even think it's actually good for the fans? Because the fans don't have this sense of continuity to actually tie their feelings to a manager or to even a player. What do you think about the entire dynamics there?
Okay, yeah. Just to buttress the point that you made, Ranieri is the 14th manager since the Porto family took over in 2012. 14 managers in just under 10 years, which is crazy. But let me not lie, I was really shocked, because, I mean, Watford have 7 points from 7 games. Averaging a point a game with the Premier League will probably keep you safe at the end of the day. So I really don't understand it from that point of view. From the points they have, it doesn't seem logical. But if you look at the way they've actually been playing, they don't deserve to have up to 7 points. So maybe that's where they're looking at it from. Because they should have lost to Newcastle and some other results that they just scraped. So I'm here thinking that, yes, they have 7 points, but they probably look at it the way I saw it, that they were not actually playing well. So maybe they want to rectify it before it gets any worse. But then the bad news for Ranieri is the fixtures they have coming up are just hell. I think the fixtures Watford and United and Manchester United have coming up are the worst two set of fixtures in the next 7 or 8 weeks.
Okay, fair enough. But now, what do you think about Ranieri coming back to be a head coach now after being out of the Premier League for quite a while? He has been out since, what year was it? I think since 2017.
He was at Fulham recently, but it wasn't a happy marriage. He had to leave them. So for Ranieri coming back, I'd say he's an experienced manager. He knows what the Premier League is about. But I worry that this might be just too big a job, because I don't see Watford staying up unless they go in the January transfer window and do something crazy. This is their current team. I don't think is good enough to be in the Premier League. I don't see them finishing bottom, because that is the place that Norwich have saved for themselves. But I think they might just be 18th. They might not be 19th. They might not be 20th, but they will still get relegated to me. But who knows? Ranieri might just make the players that much better like he did at Leicester. And they might be punching above their weight. So we'll wait and see.
But you just mentioned Norwich. Do you think the Norwich owner should take a leaf out of the Porto family in bringing in someone that can actually save them from the battle they are facing, because it currently seems like they are dead and buried there. We could say, yes, their fixtures were not quite favorable. And right now, they are actually going to have very favorable runs of games. Do you actually think it's now time to actually refresh the entire thing and bring in someone that will actually make sure that they stay up?
I think Norwich are in trouble. Now, Norwich are in trouble not because they've lost the games they've lost, but because of how they've lost the games. Norwich don't defend well. Now, that's the problem they had the last time they were in the Premier League. Daniel Farke was there and he's still there now. I don't think you can attack the big teams. You have to be sensible. You have to be logical. You have to be pragmatic. You have to know that these teams are better than us, so we cannot play an open game against them because they have the quality to punish us on the break. So what you need to do is sit back, be solid in defense, and then build from there. But Daniel Farke is the total opposite. He doesn't care about defending, and he wants to score every time and keep possession. The problem is they don't have players that are good enough to score the chances they create. So in essence, you're leaving yourself open for nothing because you're not even scoring enough goals from the chances you're creating. So why don't you just defend? I think Daniel Farke has to change his ways. Not completely, but like, amend it. You don't have to. You might have the idea of Pep Guardiola, but then you don't have the tools Guardiola has because you're in Norwich City. So work with what you have. I think if I'm the owner of Norwich, I think you give Daniel Farke a few more games. You tell him that you want to see more solidity in the team. If he cannot do that, then you ship him out and get someone that is going to make the defense solid and really dig your heels in for a relegation battle.
Yeah, you just made everything easier, and I was listening to you, spoke about it very eloquently. And what is even shocking about the entire thing is, like you said, they don't defend well and they don't even score enough goals. If you look at it, we're already in game week 7 and Norwich have only been able to score just 2 goals. I think it's
which one was a penalty?
Yeah, exactly. So it's an upward struggle for them. So now I just want to highlight one more team before we move on. Burnley. Burnley has been in the Premiership for 6 years. Do you think it's finally time for them to go back to the Championship, or do you think Sean Dyche can actually turn this around?
Wow, this is a tough one because I'm a big supporter of Sean Dyche, because what he has done, I think, is nothing short of a miracle. Burnley are a small club in a small town, but somehow they've been punching above their weight. So a bit like Watford, a bit like Bournemouth before them. Unfortunately for Bournemouth, they are now down in the Championship. But I think if there's anyone that can save Burnley, it's the person they have in charge currently, which is the only good news I can give them. The bad news is the squad is so thin that you can basically predict 10 of the 11 players, or if not the entire 11 players that Burnley will send out every week in their starting lineup. And I think in Premier League, you need to have more depth than that. There's no depth in the squad. You have, if someone gets injured, say Tarkowski or Bemi, it's over for them. I think they are lacking in squad depth, and it might really come to haunt them. We've seen that even the players they have so far have not been hitting their usual heights of last season. So I think, I won't say Burnley are dead set to go down, but I'll say they are really flirting with relegation right now.
Okay, fair enough. So just before we wrap up this segment, I just want to highlight Newcastle now, the current new owners are meeting this team in 18th position. And do you think they will be patient with Steve Bruce to actually get them out of that position? Because you can't buy a club with that amount of money and expect them to be playing in the Championship. I personally think they might pull the trigger sooner rather than later. But what do you think?
I think Steve Bruce is a dead man walking. I think he even knows it because he tweeted that he's happy for the supporters that now they have new ownership. But that he himself is not naive, that he knows he's under pressure and he can lose his job at any moment. Then he talks about being on the verge of 1,000 games and that if he doesn't get to 1,000 games, that's a luck that can only happen to him. So I think he basically is feeling sorry for himself already. I think they will sack him. It's just a matter of time. I think if they don't sack him before the Tottenham game next weekend, then they will give him just three or four games after that, and then he's gone.
All right. Just I know I said this before, but we'll be moving on now. But I just want one more answer from you. Looking at the way the table is, we all know how things turn around quickly in the Premier League and in football generally. Currently, Brentford, which is a newly promoted team, they are currently seventh in the table with 12 points. Do we think they are actually safe, or is there a worry that they might actually be sucked in later on in the season?
Come on, Leo, let me spell this out. Capital letters. Brentford are capital S. Say it with me. S A F E. Capital letters. Like, there is zero doubt in my mind that they'll survive the season. And
you're saying it, can you put your money on it?
I can put my money on it. Just that I don't have much money, but I can put money on it. I'll even go better than that. I'll say they won't just survive. I think Brentford will finish between 11th and 14th this season. So either 11th, 12th, 13th or 14th, they cannot finish below that. It is not possible. Because look at the way they play. They defend incredibly well, but at the same time, they have two very dangerous forwards in Bueno and Ivan Toney. I think their midfield is compact or has been compact so far this season. And I see them as sort of the Leeds of last season or the Sheffield of two seasons ago, where they are a newly promoted team, but they don't play like a newly promoted team. Or even like Wolves, their first season under Nuno. I think they are head and shoulders above Watford and Norwich, who came up with them.
Okay. I think in a few weeks, when we'll come back to this very conversation.
You're not ready to admit that Brentford will be safe?
No, all I'm saying is things turn around quickly in football. That's all I'm saying. Brentford, they look safe. Yes, I'll give it to them. Playing good and exciting football. But I'm just saying, in a few weeks, we might be having a different conversation. Moving on to the international.
Let me just ask you what you asked me. Can you put money on them going down? Because I can put money on them staying up.
No. Like you said, I'll use your specific answer. I don't have much money, so I can't really put money on it. No.
I said I don't have much money, but I will still put the little I have.
Okay. I don't have much money, but I'm not ready to lose the little I have. That's why.
Fair enough. I think that tells the listener everything they need to know about Brentford. They are staying up.
Okay, no problem. It's calm. So next, we're going to the international scene. So on Wednesday, Spain faced the Italian giants, the best team we've seen for the past 3 years in the international scene. They faced them at their own ground in the San Siro.
Why do I feel like you're being sarcastic and mocking Italy?
I'm just pointing out one or two things. So we saw both teams, the lineup they went for, both teams starting young players for different positions. But what do you make of the entire match, if I were to ask?
I was shocked with what I saw in the first half. I can't even lie, because I knew that Spain would keep possession, yes, but I didn't expect Italy to be so lackluster and really not play with, like, I don't know, like, there was just that aggression that you've come accustomed to when watching Italy. There was no aggression, there was no fire in the play, there was no, I don't want to use, like, the word commonly used, there was no desire, really, in that first half. It wasn't until later in the game that I think Chiesa really, like, he was just like, what the hell is happening here? We can do better. I think he fired up his teammates in the second half. Then we saw them a bit, not even much, but a bit better towards the end of the game where they got the goal back. And I would say that you must be really proud of Gavi, because I was shocked when I saw Gavi playing in the starting lineup. But then guess what? The young boy dominated the midfield that also featured Barella, Verratti, and Jorginho, who were three incredible players at the Euros. As well as, who would have thought that Busquets is actually not useless? Maybe just when he puts on the Barcelona shirt, because Busquets with Spain that I saw is not the same Busquets I've been seeing with Barcelona. So I think you must be proud of Gavi and shocked with how good Busquets was.
Yeah, I've been saying this whenever we talk about Barcelona, that why is it that when these guys go for the internationals, where they go to the international stages and come back to Barcelona, they play different? And I always tell you, Schoolman. So now, do you think, actually, because I'm actually of the opinion that Luis Enrique has been very, very underrated as a manager, and actually, people now saw how good of a manager he is after he ended the run of this Italian team that Mancini has been able to put out. They've been on a 37-game unbeaten run before that night, and now Enrique has ended that. So what do you make of the job Enrique has done so far? Because me, personally, I feel this Spain team is actually the worst I've seen in many years. And for him to be able to get this kind of results and performance out of them, it's actually commendable.
Okay, so I'll start from the Euro. Spain and Italy faced each other in the semifinals. Italy won on penalties. I think Spain deserved to win that match. So, judging from that, I wasn't too surprised with what happened a few days ago that Spain won, because I think this is what should have happened in the Euros. Spain should have scored 2 goals and won the game. So, that's that. Then for Enrique being underrated, I would say that I think when you have players who are as good as Messi, Suarez and Neymar, fans will just say that they don't need a coach. Like, these players are good enough. So I think a lot of football fans, disrespected or overlooked the good work that he did there. They thought it was just those three guys up top, but he's showing that he's actually a very good manager. And I think, like you said, this is a very, very underwhelming Spain side in terms of the names. When you look at the team sheets, there are not a lot of names that wow you, like the Xavis, the Iniestas, the David Villas, and so on. So, looking at what he's doing with this current crop of players, I think Enrique is a top manager. I really do.
All right, fair enough. So, but at the end of the day, what do we expect from Spain going into their next matches?
Okay, you mean the final on Sunday against France, because France won their... So I think I'm going to contradict myself now, because I think France will beat them in the final, but I don't think that will be the end of the world for them. I think you can keep building a squad that will be able to challenge at the World Cup next year.
So on the other side of the coin, let's talk about Italy for a sec. Do you think we should be worried because of the kind of performance the Italian side showed, or do we just think it was just one of those off games there you usually have after being in such a fantastic run?
No, I'm not worried at all. I'm not worried because, well, perfectionists will be worried because they want their team to win every game. But even Mancini said that, you know what, that this is a good... It can be a good learning curve for them, that they've learned their lessons. So moving forward, they can do better. I think in a weird way, I think losing this game is actually good for them. It's a blessing in disguise. Why? Personally, I don't rate the UEFA Nations League. I think it's a glorified friendly tournament. So it's better you lose this one than to lose in the final on Sunday, because the final, even though it's not a big tournament, but to lose a final would hurt you. So it's better to lose this than to lose the final. And so now there's no more pressure of can they continue their unbeaten run. So it's over. The pressure of that has gone. So now they can regroup and refocus because they want to win the World Cup in 2022. So now they can focus on, let's try to get back to ourselves. So there's no more pressure of, oh, they're still unbeaten. Will they lose today? Will they lose tomorrow? No, that's good. That's done with. So I think it's actually going to be a good thing for them going forward.
Okay. I think that makes perfect sense. I think it's better for them to lose now and learn from it than to lose in a major tournament like the 2022 World Cup. But I just want to highlight something. One of the turning points that in the Italy versus Spain game was actually Di Bonucci getting a second yellow. Do you think an experienced player should be so careless to put himself in a position where he has to get 2 yellow cards?
I think he was rash. I think it was a moment of madness. He has even acknowledged it, which leads me to a very funny thing. What do you think I find it ridiculous. Like, you know how I feel about players and statements. Bruno Fernandes missed the penalty and came on Instagram to apologize. Bonucci also coming to apologize now for getting sent off. I just think it's pointless and ridiculous. Just get on with it. The fans know you're sorry. They know you didn't want to get the red card. You don't need to come out and tell them you're sorry. I mean, come on. You're an Italian, so obviously you're not going to be happy that Italy lost. Move on. People get red cards. People miss penalties. Do better in the next game. Not to be coming. I mean, like, the statement was even just funny. It was like, no one is more angry than I am. I'm disappointed. I'm sorry for getting the red card. Are you kidding me? Is this the first time you're getting sent off in your career? Like, why do you need to apologize? With everything he has done for his nation, especially at just this last years, this will not tarnish his image in any way. So there's no point of apologizing.
You know how I feel about this, in all honesty. I feel it's something that I will be seeing more often in football, because now people are trying to make sure their brand image is right. They are actually...
Where does it end? Because someone will miss a one-on-one and come to apologize now.
Exactly. Someone will give a throwing away, a misplaced pass, something like that. Before you know it, he's apologizing. So I think it's a rabbit hole that once we're going into, let me not say rabbit hole. I've used that word so many times. I think it's a Pandora box that when we open, the demons that will come out of it, it will be endless, very, very endless. So moving on to the other game, which we saw. I think we saw Belgium take on France. It was a game of two halves. But what I'm interested to know is, how did Belgium bottle it?
I mean, that's a $1 million question. How did Belgium bottle it? I think Belgium bottled it by sitting deep in the second half. Like, we saw how they played in the first half. They were on the front foot. We saw that Hugo Lloris even had to make a great save as early as the fourth minute to deny Kevin De Bruyne. So the way they were going in the first half, although they didn't get their goals until late in the first half, but they played very well overall and deserved to take the lead going into the break. Second half, they came, and I think is something that players do subconsciously, which is where the coach needs to come in. So when you're leading as a player, your mind just tells you to drop back just that 2-3 yards deeper. And you dropping back and not pressing the opposition gives them the advantage. So it's now the work of the coach to say, no, guys, continue pressing. So for Roberto Martinez not to tell his players to press and looking at them, shifting and going further into the mud, because they were really in the mud at the beginning of the second half, at like around the hour mark, where that was when France really started putting pressure on them, and the coach was just there, relaxed, like, okay, my boys are winning 2-0. No, a good coach should sense danger even if your team is still up 2-0. And he didn't sense danger. They didn't even adjust when it was 2-1. They waited for the game to get to 2-2 before they woke up. And unfortunately for them, it was too late, because although they had the ball in the back of the net, Lukaku's second goal was ruled offside. So it wasn't actually a second goal at the end of the day. And then France got the lead that their second half showing deserved. So they won the match deservedly. I think it was poor from Martinez to allow his players to drop back so much without saying anything to them.
Okay, you just highlighted something, but if I just quickly say it, because it's itching me to say. I think if we're going by what Bonucci and Bruno Fernandes are doing, I think it's only right for Lukaku to come out and put out a statement for being offside and allowing that goal not to stand. So yeah, it's only right. So.
Oh my God. or the player for passing to him, and like maybe the player saw he was offside and still passed to him. Carrasco.
Exactly. Who do we get the apology from? I think we should hold one of them accountable for it. So, but moving on, let's talk about the managers. Some people are saying Didier Deschamps should be replaced, and you could understand why, because France in the last tournament they didn't quite perform and they were not at it. Even yesterday's game in the first half, it didn't look like the France we knew. France, they played a system that we've not seen from them playing a back three. Then at the other side of the coin, you have people also saying the same thing. Like the Belgium fans now will tell you, they want Martinez out, which for time now we already noticed that Martinez has been underperforming with this squad, group of players he has. Now they are from being called the golden generations, they are being called the clowns and the bottlers because of
the men.
because they are not able to get it over the line.
Anyway, are you serious? Who calls them the clowns and the bottlers, or was that just you?
Yeah, that was just me. But I'm just saying, like, it's not really a bad name to give to them, because obviously they've been bottling things.
I think clowns might be too harsh. Maybe bottlers is okay.
Yeah. So exactly. But now, where do you stand in the two side of the conversation? Do you think Deschamps should be replaced? And for the side, do you think it's time for Belgium to start exploring other options in terms of getting a replacement for Roberto Martinez?
Okay, so let me start with Didier Deschamps. I think when you win a major trophy, it gets you some credit in the bank. I know, rightly or wrongly, your employers will give you that leeway if you win a trophy. So, for example, now, we saw how Chelsea gave Ancelotti time after he had won the double, and it wasn't until after that season that they sacked him. We saw how Chelsea gave Conte time. We saw how, like, you have to give people time after they win major trophies. So I think that's what France is doing with the coach now. I think Didier Deschamps has been criticized, and I think he's right, because the talent they have, they should be playing more attacking football. But he's a fan of defensive football. He wants to set up his team defensively to be solid at the back and then build from there and counter and win games. And I think you can only do that so many times. I think you should not do it against every opposition. That's the problem I have with him. But if you're defending against teams like Germany, Argentina, Brazil, I can understand it. But don't do it every time. That's just the problem I have with Didier Deschamps. But overall, I think he deserves to lead the team to the 2022 World Cup. I think he has done well enough. Not great, considering the Euros, but he has done well enough to still be in the job. As for Martinez, I mean, that guy should have been gone like 10 years ago, because I don't understand how you can have this team, De Bruyne at the peak of his powers, Lukaku at the peak of his powers, Carrasco, Hazard, before now we have the shadow of Hazard, which is unfortunate, but that he was in charge when Hazard was Hazard, and still nothing. Which leads me to worry about Barcelona, because they are thinking of hiring him. So if this is what Barcelona want to hire in place of Koeman, then there's actually no point sacking Koeman, because he's from frying pan to fire. But then I think he should be sacked, but then I don't think he will be sacked, because it's just a year out from the World Cup. So they want him to finish what he has started in terms of the project. So personally, I would have sacked him after the Euros. But then, if they didn't do that after the Euros, I don't think they would do it now. That is just the Nations League.
Okay. As a Barcelona fan, I'm actually happy that Belgium threw that game away. So now that's the job done from Roberto Martinez. No more Barcelona links, because I don't think he's coming to my club after bottling such a game.
So, doesn't that tell you that actually goes two sides? He might actually think that, okay, you know what? I've done all I can with this Belgium team. It's not clicking. He will resign. And the next thing you hear that Barcelona are going for him because he's now free.
Okay. If that happens, then I don't see why we got rid of Bartomeu in the first place. Because there are still clans running the club. That's what I would say to you. Okay, moving on to the international scene. I just want to quickly touch on the fixtures before we close the entire episode. Nigeria lost to Central Africa.
What?
And they lost to Central Africa in their World Cup qualifiers games. But Nigeria, they are currently first on the table, but losing to Central Africa, like, that's a clownish behavior.
It's shameful.
Yeah, it's very shameful.
I don't want to talk about it. Like, like what I just said is shameful. Please, can we just move on? Because if I start to talk now, I don't know, I might say some things that they might charge me for.
Exactly. So later on, we'll be seeing Cameroon facing Mozambique, Egypt facing like Libya, and some of the other African teams. But the ones I'm really after is some of the fixtures also happening in Europe. So we're going to see some of all these European nations face get their World Cup qualifying games running. I think Russia, they'll be facing Slovakia. You've got Netherlands facing Livia. Is that how you say it? They have Iceland facing Armenia. Then, what do you think of this? I know you follow the Germany nation very well. What do you think of Germany facing Romania?
Easy win. Like when I say easy, I mean easy. Like the team is coming together so nicely. Like you said, I follow the German team quite closely. And I think Hansi Flick has brought in a breath of fresh air to the team, because the team was dying and withering under Joachim Löw. I think he had to go. I think he even left too late. I think he should have gone after the last World Cup. Personally, I think I would have sacked him then. But then they left him and then it just got worse. I think Germany now is getting back to the peak of their powers where they were at the 2014 World Cup, whereby you had youth and experience mixing together. Like you have people like Sané, Musiala, exciting young or youngish players. Sané is not so young anymore, but Musiala is very young. So you have players like that. You have Gnabry. And still, you have the experienced heads like Rudiger and Thomas Müller, who are still very, very much relevant. Müller is not quite in his prime, but he's still a very important player. You have people like Marco Reus. All in all, I think the team is getting the shape back, because now we're seeing a more structured defense with Rudiger and Ginter marshalling things at the back. And I love the way the team is looking now. I think Romania won't really cause too many problems for them. Werner as well looks like he plays better for Germany than Chelsea recently. So I think Germany are expected to win, at least by a 2-goal margin.
Well, for our listeners, you see how Josh is speaking so eloquently about someone else's country, but not his own country. Well,
No. Okay, no. I have to defend myself now. I didn't speak about Nigeria because Nigeria lost, and I don't want to get upset. That's why I didn't speak about Nigeria.
All right. We'll come back to this. We'll revisit this. But in to summarize everything Josh is saying, I think if I'm to speak for Josh, I expect a smashing year, something like 6-0. We all know how.
I was just saying a 2-goal margin. I don't know. 6-0, we'll see.
Okay, then we have Cyprus who face World Cup finalist Croatia. Then moving on, I think for the next one that seems interesting.
The people of Croatia want to thank you for rating them so highly that you didn't even just give them say 10 seconds about their match. They want to appreciate you for the love there.
Well, I think another time. It's just because we've run out of time. But I think we'll come back to them in depth if they actually get the victory. But the one I really want us to highlight.
Did you say?
Yeah. They're facing Cyprus. Yeah.
What the hell, bro? They are going to win that game easily.
Okay. This is international fixtures, not club football, but no problem. I just want to highlight something. So England, they're facing Andorra. So what do you make of the entire thing we're hearing from the press conference and even Lingard coming out to see what he said?
For the press conference, I don't know, is it the part of where they were talking about the fact that the pitch is plastic for most parts of it, and so they will likely use their B team? But even England's B team is going to smash Andorra because, the buffing class is a lot. But For Lingard, I think Lingard made a lot of sense with what he said, because he said that he feels like he needs to play regular football to be part of the World Cup squad, which is true. I think either United start playing him more regularly or they lose him either in January or in the summer for nothing.
Okay, cool. I think we've...
Speaking of statements, okay. Did you hear what Mbappe's mom said? I mean, we know what Mbappe said. We touched on Mbappe in the last episode where Mbappe said that PSG have made him feel like a thief and everything. Then he also talked about the fans, the media in France and everything, that they made him feel like, or he started feeling like he was a problem to the team. And so if he's a problem to the team, he will back off and everything, trying to make everybody feel sorry for him. That was before the game, before his wonderful second half performance. But then his mom was the one that shocked me. His mom said that Mbappe, like Kylian Mbappe, is discussing a new deal with PSG. So how can her son be saying that he wants to leave the club and he's not renewing his contract? But his mother is saying he's going to renew his contract or he's in discussions. So who are we going to believe here?
That's interesting. That's a juicy story. I didn't even quite follow that story. I just think maybe it's a case of where the mom wants to actually stay in France, but the son actually sets his mind elsewhere. I think it's
interesting. He's a grown man. He's a grown man. He doesn't need to live with it. I mean, come on. Doesn't need to live with his mom.
I think the mom already knows. It's just one of those tactics. She's trying to tie her son still in France, but I think his mom already knows that her son has set his sight for Real Madrid.
I find it hard to believe that he's going to renew his contract, but we'll see. Crazier things have happened in football.
Yeah, freak. Facts. I think we've come to the end of this wonderful, juicy packed episode. Josh, do you have any last words before we close up?
I'm really looking forward to the Nations League final. I know I'm contradicting myself because I don't rate the tournament, but I rate the two teams that are playing. So I'm looking forward to the game, not necessarily because it's going to be the final, but France versus Spain, I think is very interesting.
Okay, fair enough. So for me, I think you've said everything perfectly. You said it all. We've touched on everything that we needed to touch on, and I think I feel the same way as our listeners. I think not looking forward to having some of the Premier League games or even the Serie A and the La Liga on our screens this weekend is actually annoying. But don't worry, there are two great fixtures to watch, or two great matches to watch on Sunday.
If your country is giving you joy, you might not be too fussed about it, but then look at what Nigeria is doing.
That's why, just to keep us distracted from what our media countries are doing in the competitions and what and for the lack of football that we actually have, I think we should just be excited to get to see the Italy side face Belgium for third place and France facing on Spain.
Who is going to win the France Spain game?
Are we having predictions now?
Are you scared?
Sounds
like you're scared.
The France Spain. I think we'll come back to this later on.
Of course. We'll come back after the result.
Yes, we'll come back. We'll come back to it. We'll have predictions later. So,
we have predictions after the game.
Yeah, we can try something like that. It's something new to try. So guys, I hope you've had a good laugh, just as I am, Joshua, I've had in this episode. So guys, I hope you have a wonderful weekend. From Joshua and myself, it's goodbye for now.